Into sports.
20 yards out, Hurst to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him. Yeah, no.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network, with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
This is News Talk.
Hello there, you're very welcome along to the show this evening, and it's a good lineup for you as well. Ronan O'Gara joins us 7:30 for Wednesday Night Rugby, amongst other things. 15 COVID cases at La Rochelle in the past few days. 8 o'clock, we will have a genuine golfing legend with us, Dame Laura Davies. 4 majors, 85 wins, that's 85 career wins. That is nuts. Tiger has been chasing down Sam Snead's 82 for I don't know how long. Order of merits in Europe and the States, a record 7 in Europe as well. She played in every Solheim Cup from 1990 through to the one of 2011 in Killeen Castle, and the list goes on. She's in the Golfing Hall of Fame. An unbelievable career. She borrowed £1,000 from her mum when she was 16 to go off and try and play golf professionally, even though she'd only started playing at 14. And look at her now, still going on 57 and still going strong. 9 o'clock, David Snaid on the Republic of Ireland situation, and Damien Delaney will be with us as well. 53106, the text number. We're at Off the Ball on Twitter. Richie McCormack, good evening.
How are you, Joe? You well?
Very well. And Nathan Murphy, great to have you with us.
How's it going?
Very well. Dame Laura Davies, bit of a legend.
Yeah, sure is. In the World Golf Hall of Fame, she made it in the end, didn't she?
Yeah, 2015.
There was a bit of controversy through the years that they have all these different criteria of how you get in, and somehow she wasn't making it, but I think they finally found some sense, because for a long period, certainly when I was growing up, Laura Davies was the be-all and end-all of women's golf. Mm. And set the bar at a very, very high level. And brilliant commentator across golf as well. And yeah, she's right up there.
Speaking Why was she being held off the Hall of Fame, by the way?
They have certain criteria about major wins, and it was a convoluted process, I think, that was, right, as is often the case with World Hall of Fames, ends up excluding Europeans and benefiting Americans. But as far as I know, she has now made it.
Yeah, there's all sorts of rules. Monty struggled for a long time to get on, mm-hmm. and then did get on. Although some people still maintained, and not, you know, 0 majors. I'm not counting senior majors. 0 majors means you shouldn't be there, but he got there in the end. Anyway, she's a remarkable story. Like I said, started playing the game at 14, left school at 16, borrowed £1,000 from her mum and stepfather to go off and play this game. She'd only been playing 2 years professionally. And I think she won her second tournament, won £9,000, paid them back, and the rest was history. 85 wins is absolutely insane, and like 7-time Order of Merit winner in Europe, the first time being in 86, the last 85, the last time being in 2006. So incredible longevity, everything. So she's going to join us 8 o'clock, lots to talk to her about. Manchester United Burnley last night, I was watching the game, different parts of the show. There was that moment when Kevin Friend was caught in a VAR nightmare, and I did think to myself, Gary Neville's not really on top of this moment. You know, it's just kind of the Luke Shaw decision and the Robbie Brady decision. And it was interesting. Afterwards, he tweeted, apologies for the commentary tonight. Stockley Park was all over the place. Producer was in my ear saying Salford had scored in the 92nd minute and United gone top of the league. Delirious. I will be better Sunday. Now, I didn't realise this was the done thing, to apologise for bad commentaries. So, I mean, Nathan Murphy, if there's anything you want to say to us.
Hey! I could see where you were going from a mile off there. Rule number one of commentary, never apologise.
Never. It was great. What are you talking about? Brilliant.
Never acknowledge a mistake. If you get the wrong goal scorer, just somehow pretend that they have a very similar haircut or anything that absolves you of blame. I didn't think it was that terrible a co-commentary from Gary Neville. It was a confusing situation because play had continued for so long, and the fact that for the Luke Shaw tackle, the referee hadn't even given a free kick initially. But and also that when they went to VAR, they were looking at the Robbie Brady challenge at first. So there was no indication at that stage they were going to go all the way back to the Shaw challenge. Now, Gary Neville does have the benefit of hearing, as he said, what is being said in Stockley Park where the VAR is run from. But it was the referee's decision then as to whether or not Luke Shaw's tackle was reckless enough to deserve a red card. I think Gary Neville said it was probably an orange and he went with the yellow. And then that more or less ruled out the possibility of Robbie Brady being sent off, which was VAR's decision that if he had decided actually Shaw's tackle was fine, Robbie Brady was going to be sent off. Yeah. But that is what happens with VAR. Play does continue. You do get these confusing situations.
Yeah.
I don't think he has a huge amount to apologise for.
I didn't expect the tweet and it was a confusing moment. Like the Brady tackle and the Luke Shaw one were actually difficult decisions. You know, you could have made really good arguments for red or yellow cards in both instances. So they were both tricky. I had a bit of sympathy for Kevin Friend. When Neville says they're Stockley Park all over the place, you'd love to know what he is hearing in his ear. Because even Stockley Park, I'm curious as to whether or not they get the commentary of the match or whether they shut that off. Because I was kind of struck by being in the Virgin Media truck on a couple of Leinster games in the Champions Cup, you know, it's kind of the best place to watch the match in some respects, as well as being out in the stadium, obviously. But they have the truck at the stadium, you know? And so you go in there sometimes if you want to hear the commentary or get different angles. Sometimes watching a rugby game is better that way. But I just thought the TMO would be away from it all, whereas actually the TMO was in the truck as well. So, like, he's listening to Dave McIntyre and Alan Quinlan on commentary. And I kind of thought, like, what if the co-commentator is saying, well, that has to be a red card? It's very hard for that not to have an effect on the TMO. But that's the way it seemed to be done in that Champions Cup occasion anyway. I don't know where Stockley Park listening to Gary Neville as they're trying to make a decision and talk to Kevin Friend.
There is a broader point there though about co-coms in terms of like who should be doing what game. Like I wouldn't necessarily feel comfortable with the likes of Jamie Carragher doing a Liverpool game or Gary Neville doing a Manchester United game, for instance. I'm not just picking out those two, but they are the glaring examples given that the fact that they're Sky's two most prominent co-commentators / analysts. That idea that you have somebody who's so ingrained in the club on co-commentary does take away from the game just a little bit. I can understand people's kind of rubbernecking if the game doesn't go that particular person's way or that particular club's way, but I don't think it makes for a great listen if you're if you don't necessarily have a stake in the game.
And do you think Neville is biased towards United? Because I think he's often very harsh on them. I would always have Neville on a game, I have to say.
He can be harsh on them, but I do think that his bias will always come through. And the same is true of Jamie Carragher. The same is probably true of a Glenn Hoddle if he's watching Spurs and so on. We could go down the line, but I think it's a dangerous line for producers to walk, because I think it kind of stirs up these needlessly angry people who take to Twitter and kind of get upset about these things, because like it's natural for them to be biased towards their club, the club that they play for pretty much for their whole career.
Well, I thought last year, I don't know what you thought, Nathan, like Carragher went full-fledged fan. Like it was like fan TV commentary, you know, the way he was cheering goals as they went in. And maybe that's excusable as they're about to win the league for the first time in 30 years. I feel like Neville's a little bit more reserved. However,
Has he not done something quite similar?
To be fair, actually, PSG, you know, that night United beat them, he was a bit nuts, all right. But I don't know, I think Carragher a bit more than Neville. But I don't mind necessarily when either are on the game.
I think Carragher's general tone, though, is probably a bit more excitable at times than Neville's is. And Neville probably is better keeping his composure. I just think when they have such a stake in it, they are probably just at more extremes. So Neville is very harsh on Manchester United, but then at other times maybe is overly complimentary, particularly because of the relationship with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. And likewise with Jamie Carragher, when Liverpool go through bad times, which will inevitably come, I would expect he'll be quite harsh on the club. And at the same time, but I'm the same. They are both very good at what they do. They're both very interesting. I'd say they'll both be on co-commentary on Sunday for Liverpool against Manchester United. And I think producers need to ignore the angry Twitter mob, because there is nothing worse than a Liverpool-Manchester United title race for the angry Twitter mob. Everybody is completely irrational and over the top, and God help the referee on Sunday if there is a VAR decision to be made, because the overreaction is going to be absolutely out of this world, and they've got to cope with that. But like even within clubs, we see, and Andy Mitten was on OTBM this morning talking about the Manchester United supporters and their overreaction. And I see that with friends of mine who are Manchester United supporters. Like, this day seven days ago, Manchester United played Manchester City in the Cup and were beaten and were well beaten, and it all felt very flat, and there were a lot of questions about the progress that we thought we'd seen over the previous month, and again questions about Solskjaer. It's only a month ago since they were knocked out of the Champions League, and there were massive questions about what was happening under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Yeah. So because there's so many matches and it's very hard to get a rhythm to this season, I think people's opinions are changing very, very quickly and are totally over the top at times in their criticism and in their praise. Like, I think Manchester United deserve a huge amount of credit for getting to the top of the Premier League. But in one way, it feels as though they still have a huge amount of potential that they haven't unlocked this season, particularly around the front three who aren't scoring the amount of goals you would expect. But you also feel they're 2-3 games away from a little bit of a mini crisis again.
Oh yeah, for sure.
They were to lose at the weekend, and for both these sides, it's as big a game since probably the 2009 match, and that was on Sky at the weekend, and found myself watching the full 90 minutes. And like, what a game! You're looking at Liverpool with Mascherano, Gerrard, Torres, peak at her power. That United side who had just won the league with Ronaldo, Tevez, Rooney. It was as good as it gets. And while Liverpool won that battle, Manchester United obviously ended up winning the war and winning the title. And this weekend's game is big, but it's not going to be as decisive as it's probably going to be made out to be, whatever happens.
Some texts in. Hi, Joe. Can you ask Nathan about his unbiased commentary on Twitter yesterday during the United game? This is Bobby and Claire. He's being sarcastic, by the way.
Well, this is an example of it. And whenever you comment on Liverpool or Manchester United, the reaction, both sides, is totally overblown. When the VAR was happening and the discussion that Gary Neville was a part of, which was one of them could go or both of them could go, I was saying surely Shaw is the more likely because the tackle looked a little bit late. He got a nick on the ball, so obviously he wasn't sent off. As I said, it was sort of an orange. It could have been a yellow. It could have been a red.
Yeah.
But I was making the point that the number one thing that came back at me was he got the ball. And there's nothing in the rules about getting the ball. There's something about getting control of the ball. But getting this tiny little nick and then following through and going straight through the leg doesn't mean that it's not a foul.
There's a real hangover, I think, in people's minds of a certain era, like mine as well. I was always brought up both playing and watching football in the 90s, especially with, well, if you got the ball first, if you got the ball first, then all bets are off. You can kill a man afterwards.
Yeah.
But that isn't the case anymore.
No, not at all. And that's why we constantly see somebody getting a little nick. So if Luke Shaw gets the full ball there when he goes in and he sends it flying out for a throw-in to Brighton over the other side, then you would have said, with the tackle, he got control of that ball. But he didn't. The ball went the other way. And he got a little nick on the ball and a lot of the man.
Yeah.
But the tackle was probably low enough that it didn't deserve a red card. I'm not saying anything out of the ordinary here.
No.
But tell that to the angry mob.
Yeah,
they like, it's a weird one. Martin Tyler is the one who gets it worst of all, I think, because there is this sense that, well, at least from reading nonsense online, that he is a dyed-in-the-wool Manchester United
fan. And is he a United fan?
Not in the slightest. Like, he's involved. He's literally involved in the running of Woking Football Club.
Yeah, I think but everyone supports a Premier League team as well.
Oh, come on.
I think his closest relationship would be with Chelsea, isn't it? He lives down around Cobham and around the training ground, so would know his closest player relationship would be with Chelsea. But a lot of that, again, comes from Liverpool supporters who feel he doesn't get excited enough when Liverpool scores and can probably have YouTube videos of 20 Martin Tyler commentaries. And funnily, as a commentator, the one thing I would love to be able to do is have that sort of gravitas that Martin Tyler has.
Yes.
To commentate on a goal and not lose it. Now, radio is slightly different where you probably need to generate a bit more excitement.
But
I love that actually he can commentate on a goal regardless of how big it is.
I know.
And just do it in the flow of the game.
It's amazing. That struck me whenever Fernando Torres signed for Chelsea and scored the opening goal in the Community Shield, and Tyler was commentating. That's a big enough moment in a way. And as you said, it was like he didn't break stride. Tyler, I'm talking about, and he was saying something about Torres, and Torres happened to get the ball, and he just said, "And this is high class play from Torres," as he scored. But it was beautiful. And I don't know, it's a rare gift. I don't know how he manages to do that. Have you tried that, Nathan? Have you gone out on a certain day and said, "I'm going to give it the old Martin Tyler, just take a goal nice and easy today"? How did that work for you? You definitely tried it.
Well, now that we're not at the grounds, Joe, it probably is a little bit easier because when you're at the game, I find it's hard not to get caught up in the moment. But I think it's just his style and something he's obviously built over 30, 40 years of doing this. He's seen it all.
Actually,
like, and in saying that, his biggest moment, the biggest moment in the history of the Premier League, he absolutely nailed it when Sergio Aguero scored the goal.
Can I give honourable mention there? Because I was talking to Niall Quinn about this in Virgin, one of the evenings when I was in there doing a Europa League match. If you ask anyone who was on co-commentary that evening, that day, when he was screaming Aguero, nobody knows who the co-commentator was, and it was Niall Quinn. And I know in Sky, and I think Tyler as well, really appreciated that Quinn, as lots of co-commentators would at that moment, didn't try and jump in and steal it. Like, he let Tyler have that moment, and nobody would remember who the co-com is, and yet it's one of the best pieces of co-commentary you can imagine.
I think if that was Liverpool or Manchester United, both Neville and Carragher would be in.
Exactly.
I think so.
Some text before we get into the news round. Sorry, we've rabbited on there more than I wanted. I just wanted to. All I had there was a cheap gag about you apologising, Nathan, and here we are.
Well, I was going to make a cheap gag of if Gary Neville had to apologise to anybody, Joe, I'm just handing them out, you know? Some people are still waiting, aren't they? You cried again.
Oh, dear. The tears are never far away. So what have we got? Evening, lads. Did you hear rumours that the FAI have offered a certain Cork man his old job back? I most certainly did not. Gary Neville hasn't had
much.
Gary Neville hasn't had much to be excited about in recent years, so it's difficult to see his bias in the same sense as Carragher, says Gavin. I think that's probably true as well. Speaking of unbiased commentary, will Nathan be covering Liverpool United on News Talk on Sunday, wonders Paul in Cork? Yes, he will, alongside Brian Kerr. We'll be measuring decibel levels of Nathan's commentary if both teams score and comparing notes. I find Carragher desperately one-sided when commentating on Liverpool matches, particularly VAR decisions, where it's almost like he knows the officials can hear him. Neville seems far more measured. Carragher seems to have real LFC tint on his glasses, unless they are abysmal and he has to say so. I would tend to agree with that text a little bit, I have to say. I do think Carragher is far more guilty of it than Neville. And oh yes, finally, one point. I agree with this totally. One of the most annoying statements from a commentator in VAR, can't remember who it was, is the texter, I think it was BT. The commentator said, we do have the benefit of hearing what's going on in the VAR room, so we can hear what the video ref is saying to the referee. And then he didn't tell the viewers what he was hearing. That happens a lot. They often say, you know, oh, or like a co-com will say, oh, he's about to give the penalty, because they've just heard Stockley Park say, give the penalty, and then there's a lag. So they're actually hearing the full conversation, but often they don't relay it to the viewer. I wonder, are they asked not to?
I think they're probably curtailed from giving the actual detail of the conversations.
Sorry, I keep throwing open questions, which is a terrible thing to do when you're both on a line. Sorry. You were saying, Rich?
I think they're probably told not to go into the detail of what's said. I think it's generally probably fine if they say penalty or yellow card or whatever is coming, but I don't think it could repeat verbatim some of the conversations that go on. I think it's probably just a gentleman's agreement that goes on between the FA and the commentators.
Don't taunt us as the commentary team. Well, we heard what they said and leave it at that. Anyway, let's start.
Well, this goes back to what we heard before when it was brought in, is that we wanted to hear what these conversations similarly the way we'd hear between the referee and the TMO in rugby.
Yeah.
And I think everybody would welcome that level of openness in letting people understand how decisions are reached.
Mm. It'd be brilliant TV. Last night with Kevin Friend and the lads trying to talk it out would have been brilliant TV. I got to get moving. The news round on Off the Ball and News Talk is with thanks to Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette made of what matters. Richie, you're starting with the game this evening. So Phil Foden thus far with the only goal of the game.
He's City's top scorer so far this season. 26 minutes to go at the Etihad with Manchester City and Tottenham both having designs on the Premier League top four tonight. It's currently City 1, Brighton 0 at the Etihad. Meanwhile, Tottenham entertained Fulham, a hastily arranged London derby at 8:15. After struggling early on in the season, Fulham have drawn each of the last four league games, conceding just two goals in the process. And Spurs boss Jose Mourinho admires how Scott Parker has turned things around.
In this moment, it's difficult to play against them. To defend the way they do with five in the back and sometimes a second line of four, other times with three, is not easy to score goals against them. That's obvious. And then they have different ways of being dangerous. One thing is to be dangerous with Mitrovic. Another thing is to be dangerous without Mitrovic. They are good in these different situations. They can counterattack well. They can arrive in crossing positions and create difficulties. They are a good team. They transform a little bit their philosophy. They understood well how to change. They did it. They are having results, and it's going to be difficult.
Alan Kelly, then, Richie.
Yeah, he last night became the second member of the Republic of Ireland coaching staff to step down. The now former goalkeeping coach cited COVID-19 as an influence upon his decision. Kelly and Damien Duff have now left Stephen Kenny's coaching ticket with 10 weeks to go until the start of Ireland's World Cup qualifying campaign away to Serbia.
Yeah, so some of his statements said, with COVID-19 still viciously circulating in our communities, it's with a heavy heart that I've decided the time is right to step down from my role. And as we know, he is asthmatic, he is in his 50s. So on the face of it, Nathan, if this wasn't 4 days after Damien Duff's departure and just over, 2 months on from Videogate and Kelly having to publicly take umbrage and voice his disgust that he was accused of being the leak. If all of that hadn't happened, on the face of it, you'd say, well, look, that very understandable and sad that he's decided to take this decision for health reasons. But because of all the extracurricular stuff going on, there's extra speculation about this.
Yeah, I don't think it's a huge shock that Alan Kelly has not returned, whether COVID-related or not, certainly not in comparison to Damien Duff's departure. I'd imagine Stephen Kenny was expecting this, where Duff came as a complete surprise. It would be very helpful, though, if Alan Kelly came out and spoke and sort of clarified a lot, because he came out and he made that statement, said he wasn't the leak, didn't say he wasn't unhappy about it. So it'd be good to get actually a viewpoint of somebody who was in that room who wasn't maybe totally comfortable with it. We heard from Daryl Horgan last night on the football show. Didn't seem to see what the fuss was about. Everything that you hear from inside the camp from players-wise, nobody seems to have quite understand how this has exploded the way it was. But it's the timing of it that means the optics from Stephen Kenny's point of view aren't great. He understands that. Everything you hear is that he's quite calm about the situation despite everything that's going on around him. But it's just so unhelpful, particularly where there's this vacuum. There is this massive vacuum which is allowing other people to get in there and fill it. And COVID is a big part of that, because I think Dan touched on it last night. Nobody's at matches. So not really meeting players, talking to players, talking to coaches, talking to people around the scene where you would get a good sense of what the vibe is. That's not really there at the moment. And because there's nothing really official aside from these short little hits of FAI statements, people are just having to fill in the gaps. And when that happens, imaginations run wild.
Yeah. David Snaid's going to join us after 9 and he'll give us his thoughts on the situation. So I would think, Nathan, that's it now. There's nobody else who's about to walk away imminently.
No, you would hope that all the players are fully committed heading into the qualifiers, which are 8-9 weeks away. Yeah. And now it's about getting replacements. So is it John O'Shea? There's no massive rush on that. Is it Lee Carsley? And likewise, a goalkeeping coach, whether Shea Given could be possibly tempted into that sort of a role, but they'll want to get them filled pretty quickly. But I would just love if Damien Duff or Alan Kelly sat down with someone for half an hour and just went through this and explained it rationally and could bring a little bit of calmness to it.
Yeah, for sure. Well, we invited Alan Kelly on this evening and we haven't had a response yet. So obviously, more than welcome, as well as Damien Duff at any stage. Six Nations then, Richie, they've mapped out the immediate future.
Yeah, they have. Six Nations organisers today suspending the season's women's competition and the men's under-20s. The men's senior competition is due to proceed as planned, although the French Ministry for Sport, we learned yesterday, want further guarantees over player safety. Ireland began their campaign away to Wales on February the 7th, with France due to visit Dublin a week later. Organisers hope to play the women's and the under-20 editions later in the year. Women's captain Ciara Griffin is going to be on Friday night show. And meanwhile, former Ulster scrum half Kieran Campbell was today confirmed as Noel McNamara's successor as the Ireland under 20 head coach. An interesting appointment on his coaching staff, former Munster flanker Dennis Leamy has joined up as defence coach.
There's a text in from John in Clare Morris, no less. Evening, lads. Tyler is a staunch Arsenal fan. Thanks, says John. Doesn't cite his sources, but there you go. And Matthew McConnell on YouTube. Matthew, how you doing? A bit of a tangent, but I always thought to myself, if you were a Liverpool fan and a Jimmy White supporter in the 90s and also from Mayo, sport was a nightmare for a while. which I'm sure is true. Yeah, that's the Holy Trinity for a while in the 90s. Liverpool, Jimmy White and Mayo. That's as bad as it gets, I think, isn't it?
Look, I didn't watch snooker, eh?
Sigerson Fitzgibbon news, Richie. No surprises.
Yeah. Not really, no. The GAA confirming today that both competitions have been cancelled for 2021. In a statement, they say the uncertainty around when games will be able to recommence at club and county level have left them with no alternative. Chairman of the GAA's higher education body, Michael Hyland, says they're looking forward to a return to play in the next academic year. While sticking with Gaelic Games, two-time player of the year, Anne Dalton, has retired from inter-county Camogie. The Kilkenny legend has called time on her career, in which she won two All-Ireland titles, most recently in 2020. She was also named player of the year in both 2009 and 2018, highlighting her longevity in the game. And Celtic chief executive Peter Lowell has apologised for their recent trip to Dubai, saying with hindsight it was a mistake. 13 players and manager Neil Lennon were forced to self-isolate after defender Christopher Julien tested positive for coronavirus upon the squad's return. Scotland's First Minister Nicola Sturgeon questioned whether their mid-season break was really essential, and with his apology Lowell explained the thinking behind their trip.
In terms of the facts of surrounding the trip, I think we decided way back in November to go. Clearly the landscape, and we're permitted to go, clearly the landscape has changed significantly, particularly the run-up to us going to Dubai in terms of the infection rate and whatever. But at the time, Dubai infection rate was lower. It was still part of the green corridor right up to the point that we left, the green corridor for UK and Scottish travel. We were deploying the same protocols that we have done since the bubble started in June. And we haven't had one positive up until this stage in terms of using our own protocols through international travel flights. We've been to the Europa League. I think we had 6 international flights. We were at the training camp in the summer. And the protocols that we use here when we're travelling and operating here in Scotland. So the protocols are robust, they're proven, and that's what we put in place for the Dubai trip. So all the precautions and all the preparation we had were proven, and as we have employed and been very successful here in Scotland. So overall, the decision to go was for the right reasons. It was performance, and of course, at the end of the day, the outcome of that has been really disappointing.
It sure has. Fellas, we are right out of time. Man City still 1-0 up against Brighton, 72 minutes on the clock. Nathan Murphy, we'll be talking to you tomorrow. Golf Weekly, you're in the hot seat tomorrow evening. And then, of course, Liverpool Man United Sunday, 4:30, you and Brian Kerr. Thank you.
Thanks, Joe.
And Richie McCormack, as ever, cheers.
Cheers, lads.
So, Laura Davies on the way after 8 o'clock. Up next, though, La Rochelle in the thick of it as well on the COVID front. 15 positive cases in the last few days. Ronan O'Gara is going to join us next.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.